Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
That is hammered! Oh my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far, I'd have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 71 of The Roundtable. I'm Grant Brisby. Here with Mark Carrig and Andy McCullough. Mark, how are you doing today?
Just another Coastal Elite looking at this World Series and thinking, oh, awful. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. Everybody's getting all mad. I'm just kidding. It was a joke.
Just
I'm fine.
Kidding.
Grant, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Andy, how are you doing?
I'm in the corner. My name's Kevin Ginkle. Oh, that's been going through my head for several days. We've reached postseason psychosis mode. Like, you know, I was able to get home in between the DS and the NLCS. I didn't even do the wild card series, but I've been on the road for a while, man. Like, I'm doing laundry at the Fairfield Inn. Like, it's, you know, we're getting after it here. And I got Kevin Ginkle on the brain.
Do the Beyonce. Do the Beyonce. Come on. You got to save it for the pod. Look at
this
face.
This is a shout out to Dr. Caroline Matas of Princeton University. Kevin Ginkle, ladies. Kevin Ginkle, ladies. Kevin Ginkle, ladies. It's just in your head all day.
Yeah, it is. I was more like a bang, bang. Kevin Ginkle slider went down in the dirt. Bang. Mark, you got one?
I'm compelled as a member of the management team of this vertical to inform you and to remind you that we do have an employee assistance program that is easily accessible for people enduring any kind of mental duress. So if you need any of those services at all, just let me know. I'll get you all set up because your well-being is really important to me.
Come on, man. You don't got a Ginkle song?
No. No. I do not have a Ginkle song. I don't. Yeah. I don't understand it. You guys have been tweeting about this. You guys have been talking about this. You guys have been slacking about this. I do not get it. I'm not in on the joke. I'm out. I must be a full-fledged pizza eater at this point because I truly do not understand what this is.
The game.
Mark, I'm just glad you ditched last week's zoot suit and you've gone back to dressing like you're being Steve Garvey for Halloween or whatever. So congratulations.
Thank you. My zoot suit.
All right. I guess we got to talk about the elephant in the room, the World Series. I don't know if that's really the elephant in the room. That's just I don't think we need to spend too much time on what went wrong with the Phillies or, you know, what Houston could have done differently, because I'm excited about Diamondbacks Rangers. I think it's a fun matchup.
Can I take a 20-second timeout? Because I agree with you real quick. I want to talk about the Diamondbacks and the Rangers. I just want to ask something of our Philadelphia-based anthropologist here, Andy McCullough. Mm. If this is the more kinder, gentler Philly fans, the reaction that we saw afterward, what would this have been like when they were still throwing batteries? I'm curious.
Hey, so, Mark, you've been in this business a long time, right? Have you ever had a boss who's a dumbass who gives you assignments? And your boss is like, hey, Mark, we really want you to write a story about the kinder, gentler Philadelphia fans. We think the battery tropes are pretty tired.
Oh,
and
man.
You go, oh, okay, well, I will do that because, you know, I want to appease my boss. Well, I'm in a situation like that. If you walk into your bathroom in your palatial estate in New Jersey, you will find a mirror and you can look into that and see who's the No, I mean, I will say that, look, I think the Philly fans are I think they're as passionate as any fan base. I think online they're as funny as any fan base.
I agree.
You know, I think that the atmosphere at Citizens Bank Park was bonkers for those four games. And even for, you know, game six and game seven, where obviously the Phillies did not play particularly inspiring baseball. Like, game seven was a hot crowd, man. They were desperate to get back into that. And so, yes, it has been, I think, amusing for, you know, the Schadenfreude types to enjoy, you know, Phillies fans openly turning on their team, you know, being like, I never, you know, hold on, let me do a Philly accent. Yo, I don't ever want to hear that song ever again. Okay. Yeah. Calum Scott, whatever your name is, dude, dance by yourself. All right. We're dancing together now. Now we got to get a song where we dance as a group, not no individual dancing, taking selfish at bats the way Castellanos was, you know.
Dude, so that's been all Philadelphians talk like a Muppet. Like, what?
I mean, I don't know, man. That was about as authentic as it. I thought it we was, were on WIP for a second.
Well, there's variations. I mean, that's the thing is, I do a pretty hard, like close to mine dips into Baltimore at times. Anyway, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I think that it is. I do think where the Phillies go from here is interesting. I know we're going to get to the Rangers and D-backs. I do just kind of want to say a couple things about the Phillies having spent, you know, like 10 days around them. I think that they are a club. I said this to a couple people, you know, when there was discussion about like switching up their batting order. Do you want to move Bohm out of the four spot? Do you want to put Real Muto in there? Should you move up Marsh? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, sort of the issue with the Phillies is that so much of what they do is based on voodoo, right? That you can't really mess with it once you've got a formula that theoretically works. And if you look at this roster, like, yeah, they need to get some pitching. You know, they're going to play in the Arenola market. They got to, you know, maybe think about a trade for another sort of starter. But, like, their lineup kind of is the lineup. And it's the same story with the Dodgers, right? You need your best players to hit, or at the very least, you need your best paid players to hit. And they did not have that in the final, you know, series of games. And so I don't know, you know, I think the Phillies became a postseason juggernaut when they took 3 of 4 from the Braves, which as any of you guys know, that's a pretty small sample size. Maybe they weren't a juggernaut. Maybe they were a good team who won a series against a better team in front of a raucous crowd. I don't know, but we should extrapolate further.
It's the postseason, baby. Things can happen.
Just to correct the record, by the way, because like, the Philly fans are going to hear this, and like Mailman John's going to get all mad. Like, yo, I am not amused by them being mad. Amused is the wrong word. Like, I do not take pleasure in it. Yeah, like, I'm not like sitting here like looking at it like the bonfire. I'm not doing any of that. I just think it is indicative of how much these folks care. I think it's really cool. All right. Like, and it's cool. I mean, they're passionate, man. It's what it is. So no, I am not, just for the record, not amused by this. Not amused. Have I noticed it? Sure. Sure. I noticed it. No, but I'm like, not amused by it.
You can be amused at the anger of fans, but it's not like a character judgment, because we've all been fans of teams. We've all felt that way. You know, maybe we've lost it to a certain extent, you know, like Mark with the Niners and Grant with the Warriors. But like, we still, you know, you can connect with those feelings. And it is amusing when, you know, your friends who root for other teams are in pain in the same way that they're amused at your pain. Because okay. It's low stakes. It's the fun.
Sure.
That's the
fun. You
know fun
what? All right, fine.
Thing.
If you say it that way, sure. Like, okay.
Because you're I would not, like you're, to like you're not happy that the Phillies fans are, you know, losing their like watching that no. video of Phillies fans walking out of you know so the stadium, you're not being like, yeah, that's what they deserve. You're like, wow, that is funny. Like different yeah. different emotions, I would say.
Okay. All right. That's fair. That's fair.
I'm objectively hilarious.
So. Yeah. I want to go on record as saying I'm deeply amused. they are the funniest fan base when they lose. Like, there's just no, it ties in with they're the funniest fan base in general. But when they lose, it's, you know, it spills over to that for different reasons. But yeah, it's no team wears a tough loss like Phillies fans in a way that's like deeply emotional for them and also deeply amusing for us.
Okay, I'm going to say something that's going to enrage some of the roundtable heads, I think.
Yes, sir.
They are certainly better losers than the Braves fans are.
Ooh.
Because the Braves fans are just like, that wasn't amusing at all. That was just like, ugh, you know, you guys, like, hey.
A little bit of excuse making.
Yeah.
A little bit of a temper tantrum.
Yeah. Let's chill a little bit, guys. Like, yeah. So, okay. Like, yeah, there's definitely been a difference there. I think that the Braves fans are still mid tantrum, honestly. They're still burning.
They should be. It's a brutal way to get bounced. And you're looking at the Diamondbacks in the World Series, 84 wins.
Oh, speaking of voodoo.
Yeah.
Ooh, hey. Look, you've been around the Diamondbacks for most of the postseason now, right?
Okay.
Cover them the DS. They crushed the Dodgers. Cover them in the CS, where they displayed some serious metal, you know, not the Meshuggah kind, but the MTTLE type. You know, down 2-0, they go home. You see the sign, inspired by the sign, snakes alive, and they have remained alive. You know, they won. They beat a better team with Brandon Pfaadt, friend of the show, who had a, you know, like a 6 ERA during the season, and in a bullpen game, and again with Brandon Pfaadt in in game 7, you know. And that's like, hey, look, if you're an 84 win team and you use the back end of your roster, right, the non-peak of your roster to win, like, that's impressive, man. And they deserve credit, you know. And I think you can get into a larger debate about whether this outcome is sort of, you know, good for the game, right, to have an 84 win team you know, playing in the postseason against a 90 win team. Like, is that really what the game should be showcasing or whatever, right? That's a separate, you know, that's a separate debate than like, do the Diamondbacks deserve to be here? Of course
they won. Of course
they were allowed in and they've won. That's those are the table stakes, right? Like, you let them in, this is what can happen. Now, as we've talked about on this show, I think all of us were against the expanded postseason. We didn't, you know, I don't think any of us were like, yeah, let's put in more, you know. And I think we can all agree, right, that like trying to defend that system when it is essentially the product of owners who want more money and, you know, television executives who are willing to give it out and want more programming, you know, you're kind of missing the point, right? Like, it's not like, you know, it's not like team, you know, we were clamoring for like, no, we want more postseason, right? But I don't know. They're separate things, because like, I think that this series is going to be fun.
Sure.
I really do. I think it's two interesting teams. Now, is it going to be compelling from a national perspective? I don't know. But also, like, Texas, the Dallas-Fort Worth region is huge. The Phoenix region is huge. I hope this is like the highest rated series ever. That would be so funny to me, because you just have these two massive metropolitan areas. Like, that would be great. I don't know. We'll see. I'm rambling. Sorry, guys.
So, go. Well, I'll tell you what. Like,
I got gink fever.
Gink fever.
Just a quick reminder about the EAP. That's the Employee Assistance Program. look, I am not a Northeasterner. I live here now, right? My kids were born here. Like, this is where I am now, but I am not a Northeasterner. So, like, I remember when we'd get a matchup like this, just being so irritated hearing that nonsense about, there's not a Philly, New York, there's no Boston, this is boring. But, man, these are giant areas, and I think it is actually, in a sense, good for the game not to just see the typical usual suspects every single year. You know, I get it. Like, it's probably mathematically not going to make any sense, right? Like, we're going to have lower ratings and all this stuff, but I don't know. Like, I think you got two teams with like fun players. Okay. And like, yeah, they're not as known as others, but you know, these are good players. They're going to be fun to watch. They got different styles. I think it's going to be interesting. And you know, why not? Why not change it up? Not a bad thing. You know, like these teams have fan bases too. I mean, why not?
I go back to, I think I would like any variation of the postseason. I would like to go back to the pennant winners in each league and no other playoff teams. Like just go to straight into the World Series. That would have a certain compelling, it would make the regular season bananas. I would also enjoy two more expansion teams in a 32 team tournament that starts. And it's just it's like March Madness where you lose one and you're out. I think that would be bananas. I think that would be fun. Whatever. I like all postseason outcomes formats, and I don't care if people are mad that the Diamondbacks are in. They won looking great. They won looking like a team that should be in the World Series, because that's what happens. Whatever team makes its way to the World Series, like even when it's Jeff Weaver going nuts and getting the Cardinals to the World Series, they look like a World Series team by the time they get there. And I don't know. I'm good with that.
Well, we talked about this, I think it was last week or maybe the week before, that one of the unique things about the sport, obviously, is the length of the season. And with the length of the season is that the team changes so much. And the Diamondbacks are a perfect example of this, because what they were before the trade deadline and what they were after were very different. And I know that I think they had some rough patches even after the deadline, certainly. But, I mean, that's a whole different club, right? I mean, there are guys, like, think about all the players. And I made a joke the other day about Madison Bumgarner's getting a ring. But, like, you know, all seriousness, the Diamondbacks had, like, you know, several mainstays of their franchise that started the season with them that aren't around anymore, you know, that were released in August, September, or whatever. So it just tells you how quickly things change in the sport, because the season is so long. And that, you know, this team's fundamentally different. It's a good team. All right. I mean, they got a negative run differential, right? Like, I mean, that's been really well publicized and all that stuff. But, you know, they have earned this. I mean, they won these series. They played well when it counted. And you've had guys step up. We've all seen it. You know, I don't think that should diminish it at all. I mean, yeah, they're minus 15 for the season. But, like, you know, there have been, you know, there's a team that won a World Series at a minus run differential. Minnesota Twins in 87. So, like, even that wouldn't be unprecedented. This stuff happens in the sport. And, like, is it increased the chances, obviously, that it happens with a wider playoff pool? Sure. But sometimes I wonder if, like, the arguments I hear about this are really about not the playoff format, but, like, how much luck is involved in the sport, you know? And if that's a problem, like, guess what? Then probably don't understand how the game works. Like, this particular game is so predicated on luck. It's just what it is. Doesn't matter what the playoff system is.
Yeah, I guess the question, though, is if you understand how much luck is involved, do you want to control the postseason tournament to reward the teams that overcame all the sort of, you know, spots of variance in the course of the 162-game season, and then create it so that the teams who have a chance to win the championship, even if they do get lucky, or, you know, and the better teams get unlucky, the team who gets the luckiest, you know, you can look and be like, well, that team won 97 games. I mean, that was a good baseball team, you know. I think that's the issue. It's just, how many people do you want to admit into this tournament? And obviously from 32. The league's perspective. Sure. I mean, sure. Okay. I thought they had a good system when there was four postseason teams.
No, that's the sweet spot for me.
Yeah.
Four postseason teams. Like,
yeah.
Just
yeah,
go right
three division winners and one wild card. Yeah. Because we've talked about this ad nauseum. Like, it creates an incentive to race towards the middle. Because all that matters is just getting into the dance, you know, and all that matters is, like, getting, you know, being good enough, right, to be available to play in October. Now, like, the D-backs, they're not a team that raced towards the middle. Like, they tried their hardest to race toward the top, right? Like, they went out and, you know, look, this was – we, as roundtable heads will know, we have been on the D-backs all year.
All year.
We like them in the beginning of the season. We've always – you know, they play a good brand of baseball, competence. We love it here at the roundtable. It's what we're all about, that and pro labor. You know, and – you know, they play hard. They do things, as Torrey Lovello said, we do things here in an uncommon way, which bless that man. and you know, it's not like they're not a team that had like 93 true win talent and traded away guys to slash salary or stuff like that, right? That's a team that had a young core of players. They went out at the deadline. They tried to be aggressive in spots that made sense. They promoted their guys. You know, they got Corbin Carroll, and rather than, you know, futz around with service time, they give him $100 million, which, like, is going to look like a pretty good deal for the Diamondbacks, but also, you know, they gave him $100 million based on, like, 30 games. So, like, that takes whatever. Like, that seems like a fair deal for both sides. You know, they did some things that theoretically, you know, pro-labor fans would – like, while not spending a ton of money, if that makes sense. You know, they haven't, they're building up a position player core in this idea with Carroll, Moreno, theoretically Lawler, Drew Jones, that, you know, could compete with the Dodgers on a regular basis. And they just kind of happened to be good enough this year to, you know, kind of sneak in. And then they played good baseball. So good for them. The question is just like, is that something that the sport should want? That is an option? Or should they want every team to be just trying as hard as hell to win 95 games?
Yes. The answer to your question is yes. They want both of those things. I don't know. Right. I just exciting young talent like Corbin Carroll. I mean, and that's what got the Diamondbacks here. That's what the only reason the Diamondbacks are in the postseason, the only reason they're in the World Series is Corbin Carroll. Not the only reason, but without Corbin Carroll, this team is the Pirates. This team
he's
is
their best player by far.
Yeah, and he's like willing them to this World Series. And I think you have to celebrate that, whether it's 84 wins or 95 wins. And yeah, that's my hot take.
It's a good take.
Yeah, I was
pretty hot.
What I keep going back to is Ketel Marte. And when the Diamondbacks lost 110 games, everyone's like sniffing around going, hey, you going to eat that? You know, with Ketel Marte, there's like, hey, can we trade for him? And he signed an extension that was kind of ludicrously owner friendly. The thought process of the Diamondbacks trying to sign him to extension obviously made sense. But his belief that, yeah, this 110 losses, 10 games under 100 loss team, that's an absurdly awful team. And he saw the vision. He said, no, I like it here. This is great. We'll win. We'll go. Like, I'm very happy for Ketel Marte.
Yeah. He's Mark, you used to talk about this with Freddie Freeman, right? You never saw him. Like, he batted 800 when you were in the building.
Yeah.
Ketel Marte is like that for me. Going back to when he was on the Mariners and I was covering the Royals, like, every game I've covered that Ketel Marte has played in, he's gone 2-for-4 with a double.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he can't be stopped.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, dude, Freddie Freeman's got something like a 1700 OPS when I'm in the ballpark. It's unbelievable. So who's yours, Grant? I'm curious, since you brought that up, Andy.
I think it's Kyle Tucker. Like, every time I'm watching Kyle Tucker, it's just like, I am the best baseball player alive. And then when I'm not, like, his numbers aren't saying that. He's a good player. But every time I'm watching him, he's like Neo Mike Trout.
Yeah, I think we all have one. Yeah, like, how about the difference of when the D-backs can run? When the track meets on, the trouble they cause. Oh, baby. Like, is so much fun.
The Phillies did a good job of kind of slowing that down.
Yeah.
In part because they just kept Carroll off the bases for the first, you know, six games. But then, they started to, in game seven especially, you saw the way that their speed can really be a factor.
He did it right away. That was a thing. Like, Carroll got on base and, like, you could already, it was like the tenor shifted because it was like, ooh, that's a problem. That's a problem. He's on base. That's a problem. And then,
and it's not like the Phillies are playing Bobby Estelaia back there, catcher. Like, it's JT Realmuto. Like, they're doing this stuff against him. I don't know much about Jonah Heim, but I'm assuming he's not JT Realmuto when it comes to gunning down the base runner. So,
looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's probably time for equal coverage and talk about the Rangers. I like the Rangers. I think they got a good... Here's my one prediction for the series is that one of these teams' bullpens is... Right now, they are Wile E. Coyote off the cliff. Yep. One of them's going to look down. One of them's just going to go, oh, no. And the other one's going to be the Roadrunner and just like the physics don't apply. And that's what's going to happen. I don't know which one, but both these teams, I don't like the narrative of, well, Diamondbacks have a shutdown bullpen. No, they don't. They don't. Like, I get that Kevin Ginkel has been doing well. And I get that Paul Sewald has righted the ship, so to speak, compared to what he was doing for most of the second half. But it's not a shutdown bullpen. And the Rangers are worse when it comes to, like, actually having a bullpen you can rely on. So that's my one prediction.
Yeah, I do think the Diamondbacks did a really good job of leveraging their guys against the Phillies. Mm-hmm. But they also used kind of the same dudes over and over again and kind of used them in the same pockets. And it worked against the Phillies. But that, as we know, is a pretty tough sort of strategy to do in a seven-game series. I mean, it's something that we've seen over the years and, like, watching, you know, the Astros, for example, right? Like, when they've had that elite lineup that, like, the fifth time or the third time or whatever they see your seventh inning guy, like, you might be in some trouble. And the Rangers right now possess the sort of offense that's capable of doing that. I mean, Adelis Garcia obviously took a massive star turn in that ALCS. I mean, what a – just a one-man wrecking crew. Right. Yeah. Crushing the hopes of the Astros. That series, I didn't get a chance to really watch all of it because I was at the other one. But, like, I was really really impressed with what Texas did in game 6 and 7, you know, to take the early lead in the series. They go home, the Astros kind of do the Astro thing, right, where they like they kind of demonstrate the hearts of champions, the team that they've been, right, for the last 5 years. They go back to Minute Maid, all the, you know, like all the momentum or whatever is on the Astros, and the Rangers just kicked their ass for two nights in a row, just kicked their ass. I was stunned by that. Not stunned that they won, but just that they kicked their ass. Yeah. And so, you know, you're looking at that offense, you know, kind of unleashing it against the D-backs, you know, and a team that, look, they're going to be able to push Zach Gallen a little bit. Maybe they'll push Merrill Kelly a little bit. But when you get into games 3 and 4, again, you got Brandon Faught, who's like 18 batters max, and 4 bullpen game like that. Oof. That's tough. That's just it's the same problem that the D-backs theoretically had against the Phillies. Like, it's tough to navigate.
Dude, it is interesting, like the exposure issue, right? When the high leverage arms get seen more and more. Like, I think it tells you how good these players are, right? Like, Major League Baseball players, like, and a lot of times these high leverage guys are there for a reason, right? They either throw really, really hard, or they're doing something with their spin that makes it very tough to square them up. And yet, you know, you take good major league hitters, you show that stuff to him enough, and the outcomes start to change. I just think that's really interesting. I mean, the same thing with like the third time through, obviously, but seeing it with like some of these fire breathers out of a bullpen these days, it's just like, it's a great reminder just how skilled these guys are. God, they're really good at this. Really good at this. So,
I will say that if you could create in a laboratory a reliever who was specifically designed to flummox the Phillies, it would be Kevin Ginkle. It would be someone who could just do a wipeout slider, back foot to lefties in the dirt against righties. And the Phillies, that, you know, that's their obvious kryptonite. With every hitter that they have, with the exception of maybe Bryce Harper, you just know that that's coming. It's almost like when I used to watch Aaron Rowan and he got to a 2-strike count, it's like, what are you going to do here? Oh, wow, it's a slider in the dirt. You know, the Phillies are kind of built that whole way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a little bit more diversity in the Rangers lineup. You know, Corey Seager is always going to be, you know, tough to get out. I think that, you know, they have guys who can hurt you in the bottom part of the lineup that the Phillies theoretically did, but none of those guys particularly played well. You know, Nick Castellanos had one hit. You know, Brandon Marsh had some good at bats, but you know, they have a dead spot in Rojas. Real Muto was like, you know, Trey Turner was pretty brutal near the end. So, who knows? I mean, I will be curious to see, you know, kind of which bullpen breaks first. I think that the Rangers have the sort of offense that can break the Diamondbacks bullpen, even if the Diamondbacks bullpen is executing. I think that the Rangers bullpen is more prone to misexecution. And so it'll kind of be, you know, like who blinks first in that regard. Because, you know, watching some of these at-bats, like watching Aroldis Chapman, he's 3-0 to every hitter.
Oh, man.
And then he throws the 3 best pitches you've ever seen in your life.
101 then, on just the splitting the line on the box.
And Yordan Alvarez is like, how? Like, you know, how did that physically get, you know, right? You know, but at some point, right, he's going to just throw ball 4. Or at some point, he's going to groove a fastball.
Right. He's going to get hammered. Yeah, like that. I mean, you know, he's going to get Altuve. Like, and that's always, you know, at least the last couple of years with him, just been the bargain.
Like, what is interesting, too, is like with all those Rangers relievers, like kind of at various times this postseason, they've all sort of failed, right? The D-backs haven't really done that. Like, Paul Sewald hasn't blown a save. Kevin Ginkle hasn't blown a save. And so you can argue either, like, well, they're due, or, like, they are incredibly mentally strong. You know, we just don't know.
Or both. Because, framed it as, like, which one breaks first? Both. Both bullpens are going to break, probably. Right? Like, so then it just becomes – and this is why it's so – 7-game series with teams like this are, you can't predict anything anyway, as John Sterling would like to tell you. But like, also, this is even more so with this setup. Like, you like, I mean, who can say, man? Like, because once the bullpens break, and they probably will, it's just like, well, what now? You know, like, I don't know. I mean, like, it's I wonder what that would actually mean. Like, in a scenario where both bullpens are, you know, and this is very easy to see, right, that they're struggling, right, that the D-backs have run out of gas and the Rangers remember that they're the Rangers bullpen, right, and they become issues, then what actually decides this, right? Like, I would guess it's probably who's going to put more balls over the fence. Mm-hmm. And in that scenario, then I think it's Texas, right? Like, that's where, to me, like, you know, we talk so much about all the things, all the nuance about the sport, but, like, you know, the thing that's universal still, it feels like, who's hit the most homers, who's kept them in more, right? And more, and like, you know, yeah, Texas will give up some dongs, but it feels to me like that's a lineup also that's very, very capable of wiping out some of those deficits or extending a lead with like one big swing. Like, certainly you bet on them to do it more than Arizona would.
Well, what Arizona figured out, and it took them five games, was they just should not pitch to Schwarber and Harper. Or at the very least, be very, very careful about how they pitched to Schwarber and Harper. And they're going to have, you know, they were able, they took advantage of sort of the cold spots in the Phillies lineup, because the Phillies were the team hitting home runs in that series. You know, and the D-backs were, you know, they were playing Diamondbacks baseball. You know, they were getting them over, getting them in, you know, type of stuff, which is generally does not play, right? Like, it's nice to have a sacrifice fly, but a three-run dong by, you know, Adolis Garcia is going to be more effective.
Correct.
So it's just going to be sort of determining, like, okay, are there spots that we can work through this lineup? You know, is there, you know, who are guys we really need to avoid? The problem is that there's a lot of guys who can do damage in that Texas lineup. I mean, that is a really, really ferocious group. I mean, they're one of the best offenses in the sport all year long.
Let's say that Arizona pulls it off, right? Man, they've conquered some pretty good offenses, huh?
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Two functional starting pitchers going into the postseason. Like, I get that Brandon Pfaadt has leveled up, and that's great. But at the same time, yeah, I did not see this coming.
Dude, they would have slain some giants as far as like offensive clubs go. So pretty impressive.
Brandon Pfaadt at times has looked like their best starter.
Yeah, no, he's talented.
It's Zach Gallen. Zach Gallen's going to get Cy Young votes. He's pitched well at times this year. He's had some tough outings at other times. But like Pfaadt, you know, we've teased this young man on the show because of the spelling of his name and all that sort of stuff. But like, there's a reason he was the top prospect coming into this season, right? Like, he has really good stuff, and he's been able to work. You know, in the last two series, he's been able to work, you know, sort of that sinker up in the zone, which I recently learned is a thing people do. I guess Jordan Montgomery does this too.
Alex Cobb does.
You know, pairs it with the sweeper. You know, he also has the slider too. You know, it just has good stuff, and they're basically giving him, you know, like an 18 batter, 4 or 5 inning, you know, sort of lane. And he, like, his performance in game three, you know, swung the series back to the Diamondbacks. Now, is he going to be able to do that, you know, against a Rangers team who, you know, might not be sort of fixated on swimming in the pool? We don't know. poor Garrett Stubbs, man. Guy was just talking shop. And
I know. Like, the whole house landed on him. Poor guy.
Yeah, just having a little fun, man. That's, you know, Phillies fans turning on Garrett Stubbs. That kind of bummed me out.
Yeah.
Because I just want to say, like, as reporters, we want guys to say interesting things.
Sure.
That was an interesting little comment, you know? And so you don't want to see guys punished for being interesting.
Right.
Unfortunately. Anyway. Yeah, what were we talking about? The World Series. It could happen anywhere, but you can only find it here.
Do you think Yasiel Puig peed in the pool when the Dodgers? What?
Grant, has any person ever gone into a pool and not peed immediately?
Yeah, me.
Oh, did I just tell on myself? All right.
Yeah, wait. No, this isn't the shower. This is the pool.
Producer Brian, let's move on. Let's move on.
All right, let me get us back on track.
What kind of podcast is this?
No. All right. Damn it, Andy. All right, no, I'll get us back on track. Oh, Kevin Ginkle. I know. I love watching you throw.
Jesus, I'm going to need to call the EAP. Oh, man.
Oh man. That's gonna be stuck in my head. I think I got Kevin Ginkle stuck in my head. Although I like all the Kevin Ginkle ladies. That's
good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. The roundtable heads. I've heard from a few roundtable heads being like, "Where's the show? Like, it's Tuesday. You know, how come we didn't get a show?" And I was like, "We're saving up. Like, we got a big one coming." And yeah, it's this.
This ain't coffee in the mug.
Oh man. You know, it's a good matchup musically too, because you have the D-backs have the best anthem of any team, D-backs Swing by Roger Klein and the Peacemakers. If you've ever covered a game in Arizona and the Diamondbacks have been fortunate enough to win, you've been fortunate enough to hear D-backs Swing, it rocks. However, they're being, they're pitted against Creed, which is an incredible matchup. The resurgence of Creed, like I'm pretty excited to hear Creed tomorrow night at Globe Life. I'm going to be pretty amped for that, I think.
Yeah.
Not a fan, huh, Grant?
Hey, listen, they are
working. Sold too many albums?
Oh yeah, no, I'm the hipster here. No, they're fine. They're whatever.
It's funny.
It's ironic. I don't know. I don't like ironic songs as far as like getting your team motivated. Right. I want.
I don't know if it's ironic.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it didn't start. It's not like some guy's like, I'm going to play Creed as a goof.
You don't like ironic songs as like who was that in Oakland that would play Careless Whisper? That wasn't cool to you?
Josh Reddick.
Yeah.
Was it Reddick? I forget.
Mike Morse would do Take On Me, you know, and I don't know. I don't know about the irony.
But those are good songs. I mean, Creed was considered a bad band, so I don't know.
True.
I don't know. We're getting deep in the weeds.
Well, we saved up for this. Huh? What? Well, see you later.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I don't know. I got Rangers in six, but who can say? I think Eovaldi and Montgomery provide not significant advantage, but I think I favor them over Gallen and Kelly. But at the same time, Wheeler and Nola, I favored over Gallen and Kelly, and it didn't matter. So, yeah. You know, if it, like, is it who do you feel better about, Brandon Faught or Max Scherzer? A crazy sentence, but it might be Brandon Faught.
Yeah. I'll go Diamondbacks in seven. Just because it's chaos. You know what I mean? I think I chose when we did the staff predictions on the actual site, I chose the Rangers. And I can't remember my reasoning there because I'm, you know, I spent so much time researching this. It's hard for me to remember where my prediction landed there. But I just think it's going to be chaos. I just think there's stolen bases. You know, you're going to have people running wild. You're going to have a Tommy Pham hitting 600 or something. You know, there's just going to be something. Producer Brian says Grant forgot who he bet on. No, I mean, you want a list of my prop bets, man? I am in. I got some. Like Andy was talking to some guys off the record. Really good stuff informing my bets.
Okay, it's true. Hey, what is the what were the odds on the World Series winner? Like what? Like is like I'd imagine Texas is favored by like how much though? They like
I don't
minus.
Know. I don't what? Gamble on. Sports, Mark. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. Although, if before the season, when I didn't know that you're not supposed to gamble on baseball, right? If I had thought about it, I would have put some money on the Diamondbacks to win the World Series because I was like, we all like to brag on the Diamondbacks.
We were in the on them beginning.
Early. Yeah, on them early. And I bet you they were like, I don't even know what the betting lingo is. Plus 500,000?
Okay, according so Texas to Rangers. Minus 170.
Okay.
D-backs plus 150.
I don't even know what that means. It's
particularly enticing.
Nah, not enticing at all, actually. Plus 150. All right. Anyway, this is for entertainment purposes only, obviously.
Hey, speaking of entertainment purposes, have you guys been tracking Tori Lavello's receipt keeping?
I'm amused by it.
Yeah,
it's so funny.
Like he references it all the time.
Every day he comes into the press conference and he's like, I heard someone said something, was talking crap about our team. It's so funny. It's every day. Like there's a new, he's like, I know no one picked us. He's like, oh, I saw their backup catcher said he's going to be swimming in our pool. Yeah, he's like, oh, I saw, you know, Chris Russo said he's going to retire. Like, it's great. Like, I Lovello just comes in every day and he's like, hey, someone else, you know, insulted us. And I just want you guys to know that I know it.
I should say stuff to try to get on his receipt list.
Yeah.
You know, Rangers and four.
I thought that you were talking about like literal receipts, like he's expensing things on the road.
No, but like I've had that vision of him in his office, like the Homer Simpson glasses on, just sort of like looking through the CVS receipt and going, I didn't buy this conditioner. And then like calling coaches in, you know, like you got Brent Strom come, hey, Strom, you know, like I've envisioned this just because it's so funny. He references receipts constantly. And it's so fun. I love the bit. Love the bit.
Yeah.
When I hear receipts, I think Mitch Hedberg's joke about getting a receipt when he gets the donut. You guys know that?
Yeah, it's we like, did not need to bring
ink and paper into this. Yes. producer Brian says, odds before the season to win the World Series, the Rangers were 50-1, which seems, that seemed like a pretty decent bet. And the Diamondbacks were 125-1.
Oh, man.
Wow. So, I mean, I should have, you know, I don't, you know, this is a bit, I don't gamble, but I should have, at least for them to win the pennant.
Like, I wonder Producer who Brian, had the longest odds and won it. I'm sorry. I'm just curious. Like, who do you think is the longest odds to have won a World Series in the last like 50 years off the top of your head?
I don't know.
I would say the 91, was it 91? Those teams were both in last place the year before and Minnesota won it. So I would guess that. Just because, like, you know, it was Atlanta was in that World Series, and they had both finished literally in last place the season before. So, but I don't know. Like, I guess I should look this up later for entertainment purposes only.
Entertainment purposes only, I can't even the Giants in 2012 must have had long odds, but that can't be.
Yeah.
Could you imagine if Chris Russo actually went through with his promise to retire? And then the Diamondbacks won the World Series. They would like have won a World Series and then won a Nobel Peace Prize in the same whole year.
Stop. Who are these people who actually get mad at the people paid to incite you on television? Right? Who are the people who just fall for this every time? Like, can you believe what this guy said? It's like, yes, he's paid to make you say, could you believe what this guy said? He's the best.
He's good at his job, man. Yeah, he's great at it. Hey. Like,
Who put this rake in front of me? I'm going to step on it. Poof. Oh, man. Oh, geez. That rake. What a jerk that rake is.
Yeah. No, that's just a nice job by the rake, right? Yeah. Like that. Yeah, totally.
Rake's just doing his job, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. But that's also why I don't consume. Like, that's just that brand of infotainment is not for me. And that's fine. Like, it's
you don't have one guilty pleasure in that sphere at all.
Like, when people complain about ESPN personalities, I just don't care. Like, the only thing I care about is that Skip Bayless's brother is really fun to watch, and he makes a good taco. Like, that's
He's a great chef. True.
That's as close as I get to one of those kind of shows, and it's just not for me, so I don't consume it. And I feel like there are some people, and it's not for them, but they still consume it, and I don't understand why. Like, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, WFAN is my guilty pleasure. I get about 20 minutes of that in the car every day. It's just about enough. But, like, you know, I'm not going to lie. I think it's hilarious.
Kind of like the Phillies losing.
The 2002 Florida Marlins finished in fourth place, 79 wins. They might have been the longest odds in 03.
All right.
Producer Brian said that they were 75-1, biggest long shots to win it all.
That's nice. Crazy.
Oh, wow. He did that on his own. Oh, good for him. Sorry. I was just doing some, my own research. You know,
doing your own research. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like other people who appear on, you know, ESPN programming.
This has been episode number 71 of the Roundtable. We'll be back next week to talk about baseball, the World Series. We will watch the first, let's see, we'll have three games under our belt, and we will wildly overreact to those three games the next time we talk.
Yes, sir.
That's the Roundtable guarantee. So we'll see you then.
I was very wrong.